Let's start with hiring. Many organisations are more likely to hire men than women. Certainly, there are workplaces, sectors, even whole industries which mostly employ women, but lots overwhelmingly prefer men. So why? Well, Catherine Kaufman and her colleagues from Harvard Business School say sometimes it's not about gender. So how much do organisations prefer to hire men?
That is a big question, and I think the answer is going to vary dramatically depending on the type of position you're hiring for, the level within the organization, the type of industry you're in. It's really a question without a universal answer. We're interested in our study is trying to identify in a given environment where we might expect employers to show a preference for men, what underlies that preference for men. And so given that we're working in sort of an experimental environment, you know, a simulated hiring environment, it's very hard for us to speak to sort of levels of a preference for men in other more complex environments.
No, but I suppose we have proxies, don't we? So we know that women earn less than men. We know they're less likely to advance to the top. We know that at the very top, that there are a very small percentage of chief executives and board members, that sort of thing. Those numbers we have, and they kind of serve as a proxy for the nature of this problem, don't they?
I think that's right. And I think, you know, labor economists have been studying this problem for years, and they would certainly suggest that some portion of the statistics you're citing there is likely driven by labor market discrimination, you know, building on top of things like occupational segregation, differential preferences for flexibility, differential responsibilities outside of work. All these explanations that sort of fit together, but I think there's pretty, you know, universal agreement now that discrimination is some part of the puzzle and maybe a non-trivial part in explaining, you know, that wage gap and promotion gap.
All right. Your research, you and others, found that there are sort of two parts to the discrimination. And the first is something called statistical discrimination. Can you just explain that to me?
So when we try and understand why an employer, or really anyone making a decision, might discriminate, whether it's against women or sort of any other class, we try and separate into one of two types. So statistical discrimination is a form of belief-based discrimination, where we think that the decision maker is acting in line with their beliefs about who's going to be sort of the more productive or more profitable candidate. Right. So you could imagine an employer who's trying to maximize the profits of the firm. That employer might have a belief about men being of higher average productivity than women, whether through talent or effort or whatever the dimension might be. And so when they choose to hire a man over a woman, it's driven by the sort of that underlying belief about differences in productivity across the two groups. And so statistical discrimination typically refers to acting on a belief that maybe even reflects accurate differences in productivity in the population. But you could think of more general classes of that too, where you're acting on beliefs that might be biased for some reason.
But of course, one of the problems here is that you might not even realize that you've got that belief or that you have that bias.
I think that's right. So beliefs are a complicated object. And I think, you know, as economists, recently, we've really been trying to understand them a lot better than we have in the past. And one of the things that I'm really interested in is understanding where beliefs come from and what some of the sources of bias are in beliefs, and in particular, the role that gender stereotypes might play in driving biases and beliefs. And there's really good evidence out there that biases and beliefs can be things that aren't really explicit, right? They can operate in sort of implicit judgments where you just have an association between things like men in science and women in literature in a way that you might not even recognize when asked to sort of reflect in a thoughtful manner about your beliefs about gender differences in scientific ability.
That gets us to the other issue, which is something called taste-based discrimination.
That's right. So taste-based, in contrast to the statistical or belief-based story, is saying you recognize perhaps that there are no differences in productivity among men and women, and yet you have just a taste or a preference for working with or hiring one group over the other. So you sort of recognize that it's going to be a hit to your profitability, right? You might be choosing to hire someone who's sort of less good from a productivity or talent standpoint, but you're doing so to line up with some preference you have for that group. And that's really the classic story of animus or prejudice that we think of in a lot of at least the history of discrimination.
Okay, so what did you do to test what was going on?
So The real challenge in trying to understand the drivers of discrimination is that it can be very hard in real labor market settings to have access to beliefs and to understand how big a role beliefs play in decision making, particularly because beliefs and tastes can be intertwined in some environments. So really what you would like to do is study an environment where you see discrimination against women, hold sort of everything fixed about that environment, including sort of the fact that women in this environment might be slightly less productive on average than the men are. So you can sort of fix the beliefs part or the average differences in productivity part, but strip away the taste-based component, right? The gender component of it, and say, if it was just about the beliefs or the differences in productivity, what would happen? Would employers use that statistical discrimination in the same way? Or is it something specific to sort of the sexism or the taste-based part that makes women even less likely to be hired in this environment than could be justified through a beliefs-based story?
Okay.
And that's essentially what we're going to try and do in our experiment.
All right. So how did you proceed?
What we do is we create sort of a funny environment that looks nothing like an environment you'd see, you know, in the quote unquote real world. And that can be the beauty of these experiments, is you can create these simulated environments that allow you to tease apart things in a way that wouldn't be available in field data. So we create a group of potential employees through a sample and an online experiment, and we create two groups. So we take men who are born in odd months, and we take women who are born in even months. And these groups of employees complete math and sports quizzes for us. So they take a couple of 10-question quizzes, and they're going to serve as our potential pool of candidates. Then we bring in a new experiment, another group of online participants who are going to serve as employers, and we show them how these two groups did on average. So for one set of employers, we say, here's how the men did on average, and here's how the women did on average. And they see lots of information about those productivity distributions. The other group of employers is going to see information about sort of the same two groups, those men and women, but we're going to label them in a slightly different way. So we're going to label the men as people born in odd months, because that's going to be truthful about the group of men they're seeing. And we're going to label the women people born in even months. So what this allows us to do is to have sort of two different groups of potential employees whose differences in productivity look just like the gender difference, because in fact it is the gender difference. But for employers in that treatment, they're not going to see the gender component of the decision. Everything's going to be described in terms of odd month and even month employees.
Right.
Yeah, and we're essentially then just going to ask employers, we're going to show them the round one performances, so sort of the easy quiz performance of two potential employees, one man and one woman. And we're going to say, who would you like to hire to sort of complete the hard quiz for you? Where they're going to have incentives in place to hire the person who would do better on the hard quiz.
Uh-huh.
And the person they hire is going to receive an extra bonus in our experiment. So what we do is we present two employees with identical easy quiz performances, one man, one woman, right? For one group of employers, that's going to be framed as a man and a woman with the same performance. For the other group of employers, it's going to be framed as an odd month and even month employee with the same performance. And we ask who employers are going to prefer to hire.
And what did you find?
What we find is that beliefs seem to be a huge part of the story. And we say that because in both treatments, both when people are described in terms of their gender and when people are described in terms of their birth months, the member of the lower performing group, so the even month person or the woman, is much less likely to be hired than the man or the odd month employee. And so the fact that we sort of see sort of similar levels of discrimination in those two treatments suggests it's really about beliefs of average differences in productivity and not anything specific to gender. Because when we take the gender component away, the even month workers are still being discriminated against. And in fact, if anything, the even month workers are being discriminated against a little bit more.
And we probably should underline, as you said a little earlier, they're asked to do easy tests in maths and sports. And stereotypically, we would think of men as knowing more about those things.
Exactly. And we're specifically choosing to operate in what I would call a male-typed environment. Exactly as you say, sort of the stereotype points in the direction of men. And in fact, men do outperform women on average in this environment. You know, the quizzes are sports and math, so there is a productivity difference in favor of men. I would completely expect, given my own and other people's research on stereotypes, that if we instead operated in a stereotypically female-typed environment, we might swap these findings exactly, right? That we would see a preference for women, again, connected to those beliefs that are informed by stereotypes.
So does this show that the issue is not the taste-based discrimination, so driven by favoritism for one group or even or bias against another, that it's mostly the other one, the statistical discrimination?
So in our context, for sure, we see a huge role for beliefs, a much bigger role for beliefs than for any sort of taste-based consideration. Of course, it's hard to know how these results would generalize to a variety of contexts. I think you could imagine scenarios in which the level of interaction between an employer and employee is much higher, right? In our setting, the employee receives a payment for being hired, but it's not like they have to show up at the office together every day, right? So you could imagine moving to a situation in which you might have, you know, more taste-based considerations or preference considerations. But I think what our study does show is that beliefs are sort of sufficient to drive discrimination. So even if you have sort of an animus-free, prejudice-free employer, beliefs could still sort of motivate discrimination. And at least in our sample, people seem very willing to sort of act on those beliefs. So if you believe that one group is more productive than the other group on average, we see that people are willing to hire the man over the woman, even when they have identical resumes.
Yeah.
And to us, that's a pretty important result.
It's actually more subtle than I think we've tended to regard the prejudice in the past, isn't it?
That's right. And as an economist, I'd like to think we could sort of cleanly separate tastes from beliefs. But, you know, those things can be really intertwined, right? Your beliefs could inform your tastes and vice versa. But I think we need to do sort of a better job of unpacking what the sources of bias and beliefs are, how these gender stereotypes really impact our day-to-day decision-making.
Catherine Kaufman is Assistant Professor of Negotiation, Organizations, and Markets at Harvard Business School.